Today we're joined by Raed El-Khatib of Credit Suisse Private Fund Group, Rob Blaustein of Kirkland & Ellis, and Stephen Milner of Gen 2 Fund Services. Gentlemen, welcome to PrivCap today. Thanks for being here. Today we're talking all about fees. It's a big topic. There's a lot we could talk about, but I'd like to focus on a type of fee that is getting, for better or for worse, a lot of attention in the market today. These are fees generated from the portfolio that fall outside of the traditional you could call it the offset paradigm. So maybe, Rob, can you walk us through what are these fees? How are they different from the fees that I guess people are most familiar with?
Sure. And obviously, when we're talking about the offset paradigm, we're talking about fees that sponsors are receiving from portfolio companies, prospective portfolio companies that will reduce the management fee that's actually paid from LPs.
Right.
And so there's a question of, you know, there's been a lot of press, SEC comments, otherwise, about, you know, which fees are going to the sponsors that aren't reducing these. And I think there's a couple baskets of them. You know, the first one is firms that have some sort of value add service provider group. Maybe it's an operations group, maybe it's bundling services, things that the portfolio company otherwise may or could be going outside of the sponsor to provide. Secondly, there's groups of, you know, sort of, you know, semi-affiliated but not employed, not permanent executives, operating partners, people who are brought in to add value to portfolio companies in the same way that a public company might hire an independent director to come in and consult or bring in or serve as a director. In many cases, since these aren't employees, sponsors have traditionally not offset these fees. And then the last basket is just sort of a negotiated basket.
And then, Raed, maybe you can explain to us what have been some of the most typical economics for how these fees find their way to the GP groups, how they've been structured in the LPA, and why have they gotten the attention of various people lately?
I think there's been less disclosure or transparency about what these are. I think there's a lot of focus on what we describe as, again, the fee offset paradigm, the monitoring transaction deal closing fees that go through a waterfall, kind of 80-20 or today 100% offset against the management fee. With these other ancillary fees, I think there's a bit less transparency about what exactly are these, what value am I getting, how do they run through the economics, who's paying for them. So one example is, back to the operational point, if you have an employee that's a full-time executive within the firm and they're seconded to a portfolio company and the portfolio to a position that exists, a CEO, CFO, if there's additional compensation for that employee and they're still getting compensated from the fund, some investors worry, am I double paying?
There may be a question for you, Steve. Talk about the need within private equity firms to resource all of these sort of value add functions. You've got the back office, you've got resources and people needed to help improve the portfolio companies. This is a fairly expensive undertaking, right? And have firms found it challenging to find the revenue necessary to support these endeavors?
Well, private equity funds have certainly become much more sophisticated in how they operate internally. Part of that is the competitive landscape and the maturation of private equity. The other part of it has to do, frankly, with regulation. So again, if you look at a new world regulated environment, you know, incrementally, you almost always had a CFO, but now you have to have a chief compliance officer. That person may be general counsel, maybe someone else. You almost always have a compliance consultant. You have your law firm much more active in working with you on an ongoing basis. In fact, one of the things that we saw in our survey, which was interesting, is when you look at the organizational costs associated with running a fund. A lot of people used to use $1 million as the cap. Now it's $1,500,000, and we see people breaching the cap more consistently now than ever before. So the costs of organizing a fund have gone up. But also the LPs want to know, what are you bringing to the table to create value? To the point we just discussed earlier in terms of the operating team. How do you create value beyond financial engineering? And that's a whole new set of costs that goes into the mix. And ultimately, someone's going to have to pay for it. There's no free ride by the LP.
Do most LPs understand and do they accept that a lot of the management fee is getting eaten up by these increasing back office and compliance and regulatory costs of the private equity firm, and there needs to be a source of revenue to support these portfolio operation endeavors? Is that generally accepted by the LP?
It's funny. I think in many cases these are standalone groups or allocations of overhead. I think some of the banking affiliated funds have done this historically, and I think it's a question of how how proactive they were about monitoring these things and how specific the disclosure was versus, you know, whether there was generalized disclosure. So you're seeing more and more disclosure on this.
And I think they do value some of these services and recognize the cost is rising. But I think a more direct link that fund managers can identify, here's the cost and here's the associated value, I think that's critical going forward. There is a cost to, as Steve, you pointed out, there's a cost to all these services to generate outsized returns in what's becoming a more mature, more competitive market. Let's just make a more direct link.
How are these types of fees being discussed in negotiations now? Is it really a matter of just a need for more disclosure, or are there certain terms and even caps around these kinds of fees that you're seeing?
I think generally when sponsors are able to justify the fee and point to real concrete examples of how something benefited the fund or the LPs, you know, LPs are generally okay with it. I think there is still a feeling out process. And in a lot of cases, you're just looking at putting on checks and balances. So whether, you know, there's a cap on fees, whether certain types of non-offset fees would go to the advisory committee, or, you know, some of it's pre-negotiated. A lot of these operation group type expenses were in many of the mega funds going back a couple of years, often with a cap.
So I think the longer term, even in the medium term, you're going to see a lot more disclosure and a lot more transparency in LPAs, and even before that's negotiated, as to what's actually included, again, in the fee offset paradigm, define what those are. If it's a monitoring fee, does it go to the waterfall? Or if it's a separate monitoring fee, does it go through the outside of that paradigm?
I would imagine, Steve, as someone who's in charge of sort of helping firms sort out the various flows of all their of all their cash, that this is becoming something that LPs are very concerned about, like is the right fee going through the right, whether it's a waterfall or some other paradigm?
So basically what you see occurring post the SEC issuing its infamous, or famous, I should say, sunshine speech, is a movement on behalf of both GPs and LPs to negotiate their understanding up front, to get that into the LPA, document it, and ultimately we think there'll be reporting required. So if you look at the ILPA standards today, they suggest that fees received by the advisor be disclosed to the LPs. That's not a common practice yet.
Is it important to make a distinction between the very largest mega firms and sort of middle market, smaller firms by way of these sometimes captive entities that they have or affiliated entities that are providing services to the portfolio?
I think it's possibly more common in the bigger funds. I mean, certainly among some of the public sponsors, you know, they're looking to diversify revenue streams and sources. A lot of them are providing services to, you know, non-clients. They're providing a much broader service. But even in the smaller mid-market sponsors, it's maybe not ticking every box, but you can see them having a broker-dealer that's affiliated or a consulting arm, you know, where it really was acquired at some point and was originally a standalone group of people that doesn't want to be employees, for example.
By definition, I think some of the larger firms have the opportunity to offer scale, things like group purchasing discounts across dozens or hundreds of portfolio companies. It's much more real and quantifiable than it, say, is at a mid-market firm.
But then the success of those group purchasing programs will be affiliated with a fee, some of which will end up with the GP entity.
It will. And so I think that's where it comes down to defining to the LPs, here's the program, here's the cost, and here's the underlying benefit to you, investor, in having this available to you.